most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, it is Monday, September 24th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. And folks, today is a particularly poignant day to make your donation or join Normal. The arrest statistics for 2006 came out this morning from the FBI. We've got a breaking news story that highlights over 800,000 Americans arrested in 2006 for a marijuana-related violation. We can stop those arrests. We can start to gain from marijuana here in America if we can legalize it and tax it. And that's what Normal is trying to do. So make sure you make your donation or join Normal today. Because not only is it important that we end marijuana prohibition, but Normal's effort to make sure that these statistics are available to the public and to the media, well, that's an important part of Normal's job every day. So help make sure that Normal can keep bringing you this important information and keep working on legalization here in America. Visit normal.org today to make your donation again or join. Let's get to our important breaking news today about these marijuana arrest numbers. We're also going to speak with Mark Maurer from the Sentencing Project in Washington, D.C., Paul Armentano, Normal's Senior Policy Analyst, and Alan St. Pierre, Normal's Executive Director. Here's the news. Breaking news today from Normal in Washington, D.C. Marijuana arrests for year 2006, 829,625. Tops record high, nearly 15% increase over 2005. Police arrested an estimated 829,625 persons for marijuana violations in 2006, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's annual Uniform Crime Report released today. The total is the highest ever recorded by the FBI and comprised nearly 44% of all drug arrests in the United States. Here's Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre.
These numbers belie the myth that police do not target and arrest minor marijuana offenders.
St. Pierre noted that at current rates, a marijuana smoker is arrested every 40 seconds in America.
This effort is a tremendous waste of criminal justice resources that diverts law enforcement personnel away from focusing on serious and violent crime, including the war on terrorism.
That was Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. Of those charged with marijuana violations, approximately 89%, some 738,915 Americans, were charged with possession only. The remaining 90,710 individuals were charged with sale manufacture, a category that includes all cultivation offenses, even those where the marijuana was being grown for personal or medical use. In past years, roughly 30% of those arrested were age 19 or younger.
Present policies have done little, if anything, to decrease marijuana's availability or dissuade youth from trying it.
That was Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. He noted that young people in the U.S. now frequently report that they have easier access to pot than alcohol or tobacco.
Two other major points stand out from today's record marijuana arrests. Overall, there has been a dramatic 188% increase in marijuana arrests in the last 15 years, and America's Midwest is decidedly the hotbed for marijuana-related arrests, with 57% of all marijuana-related arrests. The region of America with the least amount of marijuana-related arrests is the West, with 30%.
The total number of marijuana arrests in the United States for 2006 far exceeded the total number of arrests in the U.S. for all violent crimes combined, including murder, manslaughter, forcible rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. Annual marijuana arrests have more than doubled since the 1990s. Again, Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre.
Arresting hundreds of thousands of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly needlessly damages the lives and careers of otherwise law-abiding citizens.
St. Pierre added that over 8 million Americans have been arrested on marijuana charges in the past decade. During this same time, arrests for cocaine and heroin have declined sharply, implying that increased enforcement of marijuana laws is being achieved at the expense of enforcing laws against the possession and trafficking of more dangerous drugs. St. Pierre concluded today,
"Enforcing marijuana prohibition costs taxpayers between $10 and $12 billion annually and has led to the arrest of nearly 18.5 million Americans. Nevertheless, some 94 million Americans acknowledge having used marijuana during their lives. It makes no sense to continue to treat nearly half of all Americans as criminals for their use of a substance that possesses no greater and arguably far fewer health risks than alcohol or tobacco. A better, more sensible solution would be to tax and regulate cannabis in a manner similar to alcohol and tobacco."
That was Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. For more information on this story, please visit normal.org. That's N-O-R-M-L.org. You can also contact Alan St. Pierre directly at 202-483-5500. For a comprehensive breakdown and analysis of U.S. marijuana arrests, please see Normal's report, Crimes of Indiscretion, Marijuana Arrests in the United States, available at normal.org. Joining us today to discuss the story further is Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre. Alan, thanks for joining us here today. Although my eyes are a little crossed from looking at these arrest tables this morning, Alan, this 15% increase is much more than in the past. Were you surprised by the jump?
It is slightly higher than in the past. Usually it's between 8 and 10% increases. Really sad to say that from the day I've got and arrived at Normal in 1991, the numbers have gone precipitously up 188%. So this particular rise was a little higher than most years. I'd guess this year we might go up to 820,000, should I say, and the fact that it is nearly 830,000 was definitely not the way I wanted to begin my Monday.
And the higher percentage of these arrests did take place in the Midwest. This is an area of the country that is struggling with meth use and meth addiction, but clearly law enforcement there is somewhat ignoring meth in favor of arresting for marijuana violations.
That's absolutely clear from these numbers, Chris. I'm glad that you mentioned that when one looks at the rhetoric of the drug czar's office and what police are asking for these days in the means of resources, well, this is a very clear example of a misappropriation of funding and priorities. The Midwest has always been the geographic part of the country that has led the country on both arrest for possession and cultivation. However, it is now sort of disturbingly greatly disparate compared to the rest of the country. The average percentage of arrests, not surprisingly, divided amongst four different parts of the country should be 25%. And we can see that it is the Midwest along with the East and the South. They come in around 42 to 43% of all arrests. That when you look at that only leaves the West, and notably California, where, not too surprisingly, I think because of the attitudes and the politics around marijuana in the West, is that there is a decidedly lower amount of people who are arrested in the West for marijuana than any other part of the United States by a very large degree, almost 27 percentage points between the West and the Midwest.
Alan, this is the first time over 800,000 Americans were arrested in a single year for marijuana. What do you think that number could mean to the media and to the public?
Well, I would be amazed that this would catch on as a notable story. From the time I got here in 1991, one would imagine that the annual marijuana arrest report would probably be one of the biggest reports Normal would put out every year. It would be the one where media and policymakers and think tanks and others would take a moment to say, huh, wow, look at these massive increases in marijuana arrests, and two, is this good policy? And sadly, most regrettably, this is one of the most ignored reports that comes out every year. just juxtapose, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, about a week or two, Normal put out a report where we only found and cited online a report about how marijuana or the components, THC, could help with things like mad cow disease. This has been reported all over the world. I am seeing dozens and dozens of headlines attributing that story to Normal. Whereas, when this is released later today, I'm sad to report, I regret to predict, that we will put this out to hundreds and hundreds of wire services and media outlets around the world, and very few of them are going to report on this large increase in marijuana arrests. And this is one of the great vexations of trying to change public opinion, is that in some cases, some vapid and or ridiculous stuff can make its way well into the mainstream media, and something as substantive and quantifiable like people's arrested costs per year for arresting those individuals get almost no play at all in the media.
Alan, we do see that the media loves to report on individual marijuana busts and arrests. I mean, every day there are scores of stories from around the country that say, you know, man found with 1 ounce of marijuana here, 25 plants uprooted there. So the media reports on the busts as they happen, but they're failing to grasp the macro here, it seems.
Well, it is, but also because when one thinks about the dynamics of how a news story finds its way into the news, okay, this is data. It comes out each year. It gives us a big macro picture, and sadly, the media doesn't seem to gel to it at all. However, as you indicate, if one goes to Google and simply puts the word marijuana or cannabis in there and searches and does this on a daily, if not hourly, basis, yeah, marijuana arrests make up the massive amount of information that people in the media report on. Why? Because it has sort of a dog and pony quality to it. The police arrest somebody with marijuana. Well, how does the reporter find out about it? Well, often it's the police calling the news agencies and telling them, look, we just caught somebody with 5,000 pounds of marijuana on the side of interstate fill-in-the-blank. And so they are out there promulgating news about their efforts, whereas, you know, they don't do the same thing when it's regarding burglaries or a whole bunch of other or drunk driving offenses, which is one of the major things that police do in this country. They don't put out PR around their efforts the same way that they do around drugs, most notably marijuana. The other thing, too, I think, regarding how they portray this is that there's a sort of a cause and effect type thing here. When somebody gets caught with marijuana that is growing, or they catch somebody with a lot of marijuana on the side of the road, the police, you know, often make a photo opportunity available. Aha! That's the nexus for the both often the print media, but absolutely the ingredients needed by the broadcast media to get onto that story. Without visuals, as you can guess, there's not a lot of attraction to the broadcast media. But if you're going to show marijuana burning that has been seized, or you're going to show a whole table with marijuana that's been wrapped up for trafficking, that creates the impetus for the media to cover it, as compared to some, you know, nerd like me standing up at a podium and talking about all of the data and all of this massive amount of police effort every year that it takes to enforce marijuana prohibition in America.
Alan, Normal works very hard to present these numbers each year. Why is having this data out in the public so important?
Well, it puts, I think, largely this amorphous thing called the marijuana prohibition into context. It is gives us some metrics to understand how extreme the prohibition is. Again, for example, when I started working at Normal in 1991, 300,000 Americans were arrested on marijuana charges. Today, it's almost tripled that. It's inconceivable that the federal government, which is driving this process, even though the states arrest 95% or more of people for marijuana, it's the federal government and its funding and its rhetoric and its policy making that has driven these numbers so sky high. And so, you know, there aren't many important metrics that are revealed each year. In fact, one of them has never been revealed. It is so sad that 17 years at working at Normal, nor I cannot, Mark Maurer over at the Sentencing Project, a whole bunch of much brighter scholars have tried to answer the question, how many people are in jail for marijuana? And so, again, our metrics are pretty clear each year. We get reports from the government on how many people are arrested. We get reports on, to a degree, how many people are in jail, but it's not clear. I mean, Mark will give a range. Normal will have a range. Generally speaking, the range is between 55,000 Americans, upwards to 90,000 Americans are in jail for marijuana. But one would think that with those humanoids sitting in a cell, in a cage, we could actually tell the public how many of our brothers and sisters are in jail for their use or their sale or their cultivation of marijuana. But we can't do that. The other important metrics that come out every year, and this data will be coming out in about a month and a half, will be the eradication data from the government, where the government acknowledges what percentage they think they got of the marijuana crop, which is usually completely overblown. But in the end, that's one metric that the marijuana community and policymakers can look at. Otherwise, we can look at financial data, if we can get it from the federal government and state governments, about what the annual cost of arresting a marijuana consumer is. But other than that, Chris, there aren't many sets of data that come out every year that help put into context the totality and scope of the war against marijuana users. And the arrest data is one of the most important series of data.
And for the over 800,000 Americans who are arrested for marijuana prohibition violations each year, what does this arrest mean to their future?
Well, frankly, one of the areas that I think really grays up this report is that those individuals who are cited under criminal codes for marijuana violations, meaning that, oh, the 200,000-plus people in California who got no more than a citation for a $100 fine, they are listed as being part of all of this. So, you know, what percentage, and the government does not acknowledge, of this, say, 829,000 Americans who were arrested for marijuana, it does not give the percentage of those who were simply cited. When I debate our opponents from the DEA or the ONDCP or other of their surrogates in the private sector, they're often quick to, as I am myself quick to acknowledge, that this aggregate number is not a number that represents the total of people drawn into the criminal justice system in handcuffs, but it does represent those individuals who are interfacing with the government. So having said that, my estimates are of the 830,000 people who were, quote, arrested on marijuana charges, about 400,000 of those individuals, 350,000 to 400,000, likely received a citation. So as we know, those individuals simply lost their contraband. The police, we presume, took it back to the lockup and destroyed it. And there's a $100 fine, which I describe as a left-handed tax. And that's about it. The information is not shared much beyond that. The employer doesn't find out about it. Folks in the community don't really know about it. It's sort of like a traffic ticket. For that other nearly half a million Americans who do get brought into the criminal justice system, oh, the effects. You know, yes, they are drawn into the system. Yes, they have to get a lawyer. Yes, they have to go through drug testing and other types of rehabilitation very often before they've ever gone before a jury of their peers. If they are a student and they're trying to get a student loan, they're going to be ill-affected in that manner. If they want to get into the military or get some other sort of security clearance, they will be immediately ill-affected by that. And they will have an NNICC record, which means that virtually everywhere they go on this earth these days, post 9/11, they will have their arrest data follow them forever. And so there is no ability to expunge a record these days because of our data revolution. You can no longer go to a courthouse and expunge an old arrest and physically take it off the books because this has all been digitized. And once it's in there, it's in somebody's database, it's going to be accessed. So an arrest in today's world for marijuana is very, very problematic, even if the person never sees the inside of a jail cell.
And Alan, even though other substances such as cocaine, meth, and heroin are truly dangerous to the individual and to the community, do you think law enforcement really is focusing on marijuana instead of these dangerous drugs?
Yes. From the HIDTA, the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area data, and those individuals who are currently running the program, they have a great deal to arrest drug users. And in their mind, pretty much the easiest are the marijuana users. And so for them, it's a notch in the belt. They don't care if that notch in the belt comes from a meth user or from a heroin user. The more notches on their belt means the more increased funding that they're going to get year to year. And so there has been this very interesting change over the last couple of years where the federal government, again, through its funding, through things like the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Program, are targeting marijuana users and consumers. The other thing that's kind of notable about the data on second review is that when you look at the West and you go back to when this big change started to happen regarding fewer people being arrested out in the West and more people being arrested in the Midwest, was around 95 through 97, which is about the same time of the medical marijuana movement, mainly in the West Coast. And I think that has a lot to do, from a societal standpoint, that as, and this was well predicted, that as society became more comfortable with senior citizens and others using medical marijuana, the overall attitude and the overall enforcement regarding marijuana would get better. And I think to a large degree that's happened.
Well, Alan, thank you again for joining us here today to discuss these numbers here on the Audio Stash. I really appreciate you taking time to go over these numbers with us. Alan St. Pierre is Normal's Executive Director in Washington, D.C. You can contact him at area code 202-483-5500. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano and Mark Maurer of the Sentencing Project in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Also joining us today to discuss the revelation of the record number of marijuana arrests in the year 2006, over 800,000, is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. Paul, thanks again for joining us here today. Do you think that this market increase in arrests has something new to do with it here, or is this just the continuation of the prohibitionist status quo?
You know, it's really hard to say until you do a very detailed breakdown of these numbers. Unfortunately, the FBI Uniform Crime Report, which came out today, really doesn't do any sort of detailed analysis. In fact, we have to extrapolate based on percentages of the actual arrest data out of this report. They don't even give us that. But until one begins at looking at a detailed breakdown of state arrests, it's really difficult to see if there's any particular trends that are going on. Certainly one can assume that, you know, as each year goes by and you have more law enforcement officers on the street, as a result, you are going to see more and more marijuana arrests because it's relatively easy for law enforcement to engage in this activity. And from a law enforcement perspective, it's relatively safe. It's an easy way to earn overtime. And it doesn't surprise me that despite the passage of certain decriminalization laws and deprioritization laws in certain states and in certain localities, you continue on a national level to see an increase in overall marijuana arrests. And I really do want to point out that while this year is another record high number of arrests, you don't have to go back that far. In fact, if you go back just to the early 90s, to see a time when there was only on average about 300,000 Americans arrested for marijuana. At the time, we thought that was egregious. Now, looking back, that's simply a drop in the bucket compared to the number of Americans arrested today.
And Paul, in relation to this report, we also discussed the cost of marijuana prohibition enforcement to the tune of tens of billions of dollars annually. But if marijuana prohibition were to end, what kinds of financial benefits could be realized?
Well, some analysts estimate that we're already spending in law enforcement and criminal justice costs, you know, over $10 billion a year on these arrests. Certainly that money, it wouldn't necessarily be saved in that it wouldn't go back to the taxpayers, unfortunately, but certainly law enforcement could spend those resources in other areas. And certainly if marijuana were to be taxed and regulated like cigarettes or like alcohol, there would be a windfall in money that now simply goes to the underground black market and is, you know, never reaped by society for any sort of benefits, and certainly the taxpayers never see the back end of that. Certainly there are billions of dollars in the underground economy that if marijuana be regulated could then be above ground and would be certainly of benefit to society and the public at large.
And do you think that these increased arrests will also increase the call for reform? I mean, every one of these over 800,000 Americans now is directly invested in the reform effort in many ways already.
You would think, and certainly, you know, it really in some respects needs to be a wake-up call for the marijuana law reform movement. It's easy to point towards certain victories, but many of those victories are often symbolic, and nothing drives that point home more clearly than to see the fact that at a time when more money than ever is being pumped into drug law reform movements, arrests for illicit drugs continue to go up. Now, I do think one caveat on this that has to be stated, in this, and particularly when we're talking about marijuana arrests per se, is the FBI is reporting data not just from marijuana arrests, but in states that have citations or tickets for minor marijuana penalties, those also get reported as arrests. So while we are seeing this uptick in marijuana arrests, it's not quite fair to think that every one of those 820,000 individuals accounted for by the FBI actually were arrested, booked, processed, and had to make bail. So clearly, you know, many of those individuals were simply given citations to appear in court or tickets that they mailed in.
And when we talk about these numbers from the FBI, these are just the arrests. They're not the further court costs and prosecutions, etc., but this is just the first point of contact that prohibition has with peaceful marijuana smokers.
Sure, this is the rawest of the raw data. This is state police data that is then reported to the FBI. And like I said, no detailed analysis has been done on any of this data. And really, until that is done, it is hard, to go back to your first question, to estimate whether there are local trends, whether there are nationwide trends. As I mentioned to you earlier, you know, one city alone, New York City, which only a few years ago had an upwards of 50,000 arrests for minor marijuana violations, you know, one city alone can spike and skew the entire national trend.
Paul, often we discuss the racial disparity of marijuana arrests, and that certainly is playing in with the reports again this year, but Were there any other trends that have stood out for you as well?
A demographic that jumps out at me in past years, even more so than race, is age. In past years, nearly 30% of all the individuals arrested or cited for marijuana violations in this country are under 19 years old. And if I recall, something like about 75% of all the individuals arrested are under age 30. So when we're talking about marijuana arrests, we're predominantly talking about arrests of young people, and in almost a majority of cases, we're talking about arresting teenagers. And I think that is a really important point to bring up for a number of reasons. Maybe one of the most important ones from a policy or reform perspective is the fact that right now we have a law that disproportionately affects a demographic of people, and I'm talking about young people, that statistically have very little political power and very little income to try and support reforming a law that disproportionately adversely affects them.
So, Paul, it sounds like marijuana prohibition really is a very unique social issue.
I actually think it is to a large degree. And I think, like I said, it speaks to why many people wonder why there are not more actual stakeholders involved in this reform movement. Well, you know, the stakeholders overall are people that are very young and they're at a time in their lives where they are less apt to get involved in political causes, and they're less, they have less means to become involved in political causes. And as a result, I don't think politicians are particularly moved by the constituency that really has the most to gain from reforming these laws.
Righto. Well, Paul, thank you again for joining us to go over these numbers again today. Paul Armentano is Normal's Senior Policy Analyst. He can be contacted at paul@normal.org. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Mark Maurer from the Sentencing Project in Washington, D.C. Mark Maurer is with the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit, The Sentencing Project. In his newest paper, co-authored with Ryan Starr, is a 25-year quagmire, The War on Drugs and Its Impact on American Society. We have links to the paper and to The Sentencing Project at normalaudiostash.com. Good to speak with you today, Mark. Thank you again for joining us to discuss this new FBI data showing yet another record number of marijuana arrests. Mark, what does this new data today say about the state of prohibition in America?
Well, you know, regardless of what one may think about the war on drugs, I think most people would believe that to the extent we are going to arrest and prosecute people for drug offenses, we should have some sort of hierarchy, and that hierarchy should involve first, you know, people who are large-scale drug distributors should be the first target, and secondly, drugs that are most harmful should be another key target, too. And what we've seen, of course, is that for about 15 years now that we have a very substantial escalation in the proportion and the number of people prosecuted for marijuana offenses, basically just taking the place of heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, all drugs that, you know, virtually everyone would say, potentially much more harmful to people than marijuana is. So real shift in the whole focus of the war on drugs.
And how do all these marijuana arrests impact incarceration overall, Mark?
Well, I think we see the impact of marijuana more at the arrest level, at the court level, less so in prison. We estimated a report we did a couple of years ago, there were somewhere in the range of 30,000 people in state and federal prison for a marijuana offense. And I don't want to suggest that that's not a significant number, but it's certainly just a small fraction of all the people in prison for a drug offense or for any crime. But where we do see the impact very significantly is, you know, again, first in the arrest rate with, you know, more than 800,000 marijuana arrests last year, and then just, you know, the amount of time and processing through the court system. And intriguingly, too, if we look at, you know, what is the level of these cases, the severity, we found that our analysis only one of every 18 marijuana arrests results in a felony conviction. So it's not as if these are, you know, somehow people, you know, importing marijuana by the plane load or something like that and getting very substantial convictions. It's, you know, by and large, low-level possession offenses, low-level sales offenses and the like. So enormous resources going into this and, you know, very little to show for it in terms of any sort of crime control benefits that might be expected by some.
And when we talk about these law enforcement resources used, how much does it cost in time and money to make these marijuana arrests?
Well, certainly in time, you know, everything is a series of trade-offs for the most part. And, you know, anytime a police officer is out there making a marijuana arrest, you know, that person is not responding to a report about domestic violence, is not out looking for drunk drivers or, you know, anything else that we might think might be appropriate or useful in terms of public safety. So, you know, if there's a legitimate argument that can be made about a particular marijuana arrest or strategy or something, you know, we should hear what that is. But the trade-offs are very substantial. You know, law enforcement resources are limited, and we all need to decide, you know, how to prioritize those resources. So even to the extent that one may believe that it's appropriate to engage in significant marijuana arrests, the question is, what do we give up in the process of doing that? And I think often we're giving up can be very significant.
Mark, I want to discuss the racial disparity among prohibition violations here for a moment. In places like New York City, we've seen data from Harry Levine that 85% of those arrested in New York City for a marijuana violation are black or Hispanic. And that arrest disparity exists essentially nationwide. But those numbers, they don't correlate with the number of African American or Hispanic Americans who are smoking marijuana.
Well, exactly. And we see this not only for marijuana, but across the board when it comes for drug offenses, that African Americans use drugs at roughly the same proportion as other groups. But the deeper you go in the system, the more heavily represented African Americans are. In our most recent report, we find that African Americans are about 14% of regular drug users, but they're 37% of people arrested for drug offense and 56% of people in state prison for a drug offense. And I think what this reflects is basically law enforcement and prosecutorial priorities on addressing, on looking at certain neighborhoods, certain communities for drug violations, in other communities either ignoring it or allowing it to be treated more as a public health problem rather than a criminal justice problem. So it sort of compounds the impact of the war on drugs by such heavy targeting in communities of color.
Mark, the Sentencing Project and other groups, along with more than a few elected officials, have really condemned the three strikes laws and those policies out there. How much does marijuana prohibition play into individuals receiving their third strike and ending up with a large amount of time in jail or prison?
Well, I don't want to suggest it's a key factor, but in a state like California, which has a very broad three strikes policy, your first two convictions need to be what are called violent or serious crimes. And normally that wouldn't involve most drug offenses. But then your third felony, which can result in a sentence of 25 to life, can be for any felony on the books in California. It doesn't need to be violent or serious, so that even a relatively low-level drug sale of marijuana or some other drug can qualify as your third strike. And indeed, there have been people whose third strike was for a marijuana offense in California and are now doing 25 to life in a California prison. So, you know, when we adopt these sort of habitual offender laws such as three strikes, we really up the ante significantly and just raise the prospect that, that again, a low-level drug offense can escalate quite dramatically in terms of the punishment that's imposed on people.
I have to ask, are we reaching perhaps a saturation point for marijuana arrests? Over 800,000, this is a lot of people, Mark. I mean, could we be reaching a point here, even from the law enforcement viewpoint, that it doesn't make sense to arrest so many people for this one offense? Or is this a trend that could keep increasing?
Well, I think marijuana offenses are very discretionary in terms of how many arrests we see and how law enforcement responds. Unlike a murder, an armed robbery, where the police are called and, of course, they're going to respond, when it comes to policing drug offenses, marijuana offenses, you know, that's generally a decision made by the local police chief, made by the local mayor and other political figures. And, you know, so we see pretty broad variation in both the number of drug offenses, the racial dynamics, the drugs that are brought in if you look across various cities. And, you know, essentially it gets at some of those trade-offs. In New York City, the police and the city officials for 15 years now or so have consciously made a decision that they want to use marijuana laws to go after what they would view as potential crime in low-income communities. And so they consciously are making large-scale arrests. Their theory is if we can bust somebody on a marijuana violation today, then this person maybe won't commit a burglary tomorrow. Now, there's a lot of dispute about whether that's a reasonable strategy, but that's consciously what's been done. In other cities, either individual officers or the police department itself are essentially saying, you know, we don't want to use our time prosecuting low-level offenses, kids smoking a joint on the corner. We have better things to do. And so depending on how those decisions are made and who's involved in making those decisions, we can see very broadly differing results as we look across different areas, essentially.
Mark, the Sentencing Project overall, and in your recent paper, you call for increased funding for drug treatment programs as a method to combat drug addiction. This is part of a harm reduction policy. But we also see right now a lot of people put into inpatient detox or inpatient drug programs for marijuana, even though there's data that suggests only 1 out of 10 marijuana users ever exhibits any signs of clinically defined dependence. But many say that those put into these inpatient treatment programs for marijuana are essentially preventing more hard drug users who do need these programs from getting into them. So when we look at increased funding for drug treatment, should we be looking to keep marijuana out of that equation?
Yeah, no, I think is a very sharp point. I think we need more drug treatment for people who require drug treatment, and we need to figure out how we identify that. There are significant numbers of people who have a serious problem of drug dependency, not necessarily from marijuana, who are not currently able to get publicly funded treatment. The waiting lists are too long, the resources are too thin, and so too many people go to prison only because those treatment slots are not available. But you're absolutely correct. We have to be careful that we don't implement the reverse policy and send people through treatment who are not appropriate people who require that, because that's not a good use of resources for anybody. So we need to be careful about how we make those distinctions. I think it shouldn't be that difficult. You know, if we do the proper kinds of assessment, you know, we should be able to, figure out, you know, the difference between a kid who's smoking a joint on Saturday night and somebody who's been using cocaine for the last 2 years, and, you know, determine what's the best way to approach those for each of those cases, and how should we best respond, whether it's through a criminal justice system, public health system, or, some other way of dealing with those issues.
And let's also delve into the hypothetical here for a moment, Mark. Is the fact that marijuana is lumped in with other substances as a Schedule I drug keeping us away from a success to combat addictions to really dangerous substances like cocaine, heroin, and meth?
Well, I think it does get very confused in how people analyze that. And I think, you know, there are many police departments and political leaders who recognize that, you know, we have to have this hierarchy of how much we care about particular drugs, how much harm we think is caused by them, things like that. And whether they're classified as Schedule A or not, I think many people are very capable of making those decisions. But certainly, you know, our broad approach, you know, when we call it the war on drugs, there's far too many people still don't make distinctions among various drugs, their impact, their effects on individuals, their effects on communities, and what the best response would be. So I think, you know, far too often we do lump all of these issues together, and obviously that's, you know, not a very rational or compassionate way to go about setting up those policies.
And if we did remove marijuana from this concept of drugs or Schedule I controlled substances, would that change policy so that the method of harm reduction could then be a success overall?
Well, it's hard to say. I think you know, marijuana, say, were decriminalized and we didn't make the arrests. Clearly, there'd be fewer incentives, you know, for law enforcement keeping, or it'd be more difficult for law enforcement to be engaged in the war on drugs because marijuana arrests are now more than 40% of all drug arrests. You know, we'd still have to think through. In a place like New York City where the police are using the war on drugs and using marijuana arrests almost as a way of getting at what they see as, you know, further crimes that might be committed. If they weren't making marijuana arrests, you know, it's conceivable that they would start arresting the same groups of young people for, you know, unauthorized drinking, for loitering, and offenses like that as well, just as a way of getting at their activity. So, you know, it in part, I think, requires looking at the broader strategy of what we're doing about crime and neighborhood disorder. Marijuana is an easy way to implement some of those strategies, but it's at least conceivable that they would find other means of doing that. And again, whether or not one believes that's a smart way to go about doing things, you know, some of the officials can get quite creative, you know, when their ultimate goal is essentially greater law enforcement in low-income communities.
Righto. Mark Maurer is from the Sentencing Project in Washington, D.C. His newest paper, co-authored with Ryan Starr, is a 25-year quagmire, The War on Drugs and Its Impact on American Society. Mark, thank you again for joining us here today. We have links to the Sentencing Project and to his newest paper right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
The podcasting technology of NORML is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.